Hello, hello. You're listening to Art House Garage, the snob-free film community, where we discuss art house, indie, and classic cinema, and we promise not to talk down to you. I'm your host, Andrew Sweatman, and today we are discussing a film that is pretty unique, somewhat controversial, and Oscar-nominated. That film is Jojo Rabbit. More about that in a second, but I wanted to first highlight some exciting Art House Garage news. We just launched an email newsletter. This is designed to keep you connected to top-level film news, provide streaming movie recommendations, and highlight the latest reviews and podcast episodes from arthousegarage.com. Since Art House Garage is based in Arkansas and we love to support local, the email newsletter will also connect you to the film news and events happening here in our state. If you are a film lover in Arkansas, don't miss it. You can sign up at arthousegarage.com/subscribe. And if you know about any upcoming Arkansas film events that I may have missed, make sure to email me, andrew@arthousegarage.com, and let me know so I can spread the word. Alright, enough about that. Back to today's movie. Director Taika Waititi has brought us a handful of charming, hilarious, and touching films in the form of What We Do in the Shadows, Hunt for the Wilder People, Thor Ragnarok, and now this one, Jojo Rabbit, which has won a few awards this year already and now been nominated for 6 Oscars for film editing, production design, costume design, and adapted screenplay, plus Scarlett Johansson for supporting actress and the big one, Best Picture. But what is it about? We will keep this discussion spoiler-free for those who haven't seen it yet, and I highly recommend that you do. But the basic plot is this. A sweet 10-year-old boy named Jojo, played by Roman Griffin Davis, has joined the Hitler Youth in Nazi Germany and is very gung-ho about his Nazism. This becomes a problem when he discovers his mother, played by Scarlett Johansson, is secretly hiding a young Jewish girl, played by Thomasin McKenzie, in their home. Throughout this story, he is also accompanied by his imaginary friend, Adolf Hitler himself, played hilariously by the director, Taika Waititi. Joining me for this discussion once again is Hot Springs, Arkansas film critic Philip Price, host of Tavern Talk by Initial Reaction on YouTube, and who appeared on a previous episode of this podcast to discuss the film Waves. If you're unfamiliar with Philip's work, he is an incredibly hardworking and prolific producer of written and video film reviews, which you can find over at his website, reviewsfromabed.com. I was thrilled to have him back and get his thoughtful take on this unique film. Here is our discussion of Jojo Rabbit.
Kill Master Jojo.
You're a pup man. Prepare to leave the house.
Today you boys will be involved in such activities as war games, ambush techniques, and blowing stuff up.
I don't think I can do this.
Was?
Of course you can.
When I was your age, I had an imaginary friend. Got me in so much trouble.
Kids, it's time to burn some books.
Yeah! You're growing up too fast. 10-year-olds shouldn't be celebrating war and talking politics.
Hi, Hitler.
I wish more of our young boys had your blind fanaticism.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Philip. Welcome to Art House Garage.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I'm excited to be on and to talk about some movies.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to talk today about Jojo Rabbit. So first of all, how many times did you see Jojo Rabbit? How recently did you see it?
Well, see, that's the thing. I've only seen Jojo Rabbit once, and it was probably just over a month ago now. But I do want to see it again soon, so I'll definitely see it before like the award shows kick up and everything.
Yeah. Well, no shame. It's about the same for me. I think it was maybe over a month, and I only saw it the once. But I really had a strong response to it. I thought it was really good. So one of the controversies I have seen around it, though, is it has a very specific tone. It kind of goes from more broad comedy to kind of more serious dramatic moments. I've seen some people saying that it's criticizing it for the way it's switching between those, saying it doesn't handle it well, or even saying it might be disrespectful to, I don't know, war and World War II. What do you make of the tone?
I think that, you know, even though a lot of time has passed, people are still very sensitive to like the horrors that the Nazis committed and were responsible for. But I think it's in service of such a a promising message or just a such a positive message that I think, you know, or I would hope that it's respectful enough to it that even people who were involved in those events would understand why Taika Waititi's using them to kind of make an example for modern day audiences.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with you. I think it does. There was a couple of moments when I was kind of in a more serious emotional headspace and a joke basically happened. It kind of pulled me out of it a little bit. So I might criticize it on just a filmmaking level, but I didn't find it disrespectful either. I think it does take the war seriously and Nazism seriously, even as it's poking fun at different things. So I would agree with you on that. Speaking of the Nazism, I think that's the other controversy I've seen, is some people saying it empathizes too much with Nazis or, so did you have an opinion on that question?
Yeah, really, I really wasn't aware that was kind of consensus around it. I can certainly see how that is perceived given, it's just difficult because your main character is this 10-year-old boy who, you know, you automatically want to be compassionate to a child no matter what, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because he is kind of this fanatic he's known nothing else in his life, though. Yeah. This is his perspective on everything. Like, mm-hmm. he doesn't know how outrageous and ridiculous these views and presumptions about, you know, Jewish people are. Mm-hmm. Like, that's normal to him. So I don't think it's crazy to be empathetic towards this character in particular. That said, it's tough, you know, admittedly tough to make a movie about this kid or about a kid who you kind of don't like, you know, from the get-go. Yeah. And I think that's kind of what you were talking about how Taika would insert the comedy when mm-hmm. things would get a little too heavy. It almost felt like a little bit of a scapegoat. Because he does use it so sparingly, mm-hmm. And it is him. You feel like he's just like, okay, hold on, guys, let's not get too heavy here. Time for a joke. I'm definitely with you on that plane about how I think he managed the tone well. You know, we were talking about the balancing act, because that's probably the biggest challenge of this movie is just balancing the comedy and the seriousness of the drama that the movie entails. I think he does a good job, especially considering the weight of the drama and the kind of ridiculousness of the comedy. I think there is a good balance there, but I do think he kind of leans on it as a crutch, a little too frequently sometimes. I kind of wish there was more of it, honestly.
I think I agree with that. So, like, on the tone question, really the big moment I can think of is kind of at the end, and I won't spoil anything, but there's basically a battle happening and you're kind of seeing the horrors of war, and then Sam Rockwell's character suddenly kind of breaks that emotion with something funny that has been referenced and kind of set up. So it landed as a joke, but that was the one moment that it kind of jerked me out of feeling what I felt like I was successfully feeling, kind of the emotions of, well, this is horrible, though, what's happening to their country, kind of thing. But yeah, as far as the Nazism goes, I think it's kind of a genius setup to have this kid who, we immediately like, and he's a really cute kid, and he's so passionate, and then, you know, the thing he's passionate about is Nazism, and that probably, credit for that probably goes to the book, because I know it's based on a book.
Right, right.
But yeah, I think it does a good job at kind of poking fun at Nazism while still saying these are real people who have gotten swept up in this. And I think then you can parallel to modern times with, you know, political statements that it could maybe make. But the character that I struggle with a little bit, ultimately I think it works, is actually Sam Rockwell's character, whose name is Captain Klinzendorf, because he is he's a Nazi at the beginning of the movie, and he's kind of washed up and he's very funny. But even at the end, he's doing something kind of heroic for Jojo, even though he is, he never renounces his Nazism or anything. So I think that it is tricky. I think there's a kind of a level, so I can see why people would have an issue with it. And I think they made probably a huge, I mean, you can tell in all the marketing pointing out, this is satire, because on the surface, right. Oh, this is a movie about a nice Hitler in this boy's head. That's a crazy movie to make in 2019, but pushing that satire word all the time in the marketing, I think it worked and seems to, hopefully, I don't know how well it did at the box office, not huge numbers, but it seemed to land well and generally favorable what I'm hearing. But
yeah, Fox Searchlight gave Taika the go ahead to make another original, so it must have done all right for him.
What did you think of Taika's performance, by the way? Or did you have any other kind of favorite performances or characters in the movie?
Yeah, I was, you know, talking about Sam Rockwell's character. It's funny because, you know, he's kind of been pigeonholed the last couple years of playing like this despicable kind of person or racist or, you know, whatever, or Nazi, and who kind of comes around and, you know, kind of turns that stereotype around into, you know, something you're not necessarily suspecting or more understanding or just, you know, more well-rounded of a person by the end of the movie. And, you know, he knows how to play it, and he's so charming, and his presence is so just infectious that, like, it's like, oh, okay, like, I can get on board for that. And I kind of, you know, I did hear again, you know, just like with Three Billboards, like, I was, you know, I was like, okay, you know, I was compassionate towards his character. I was surprised that he had as much of an arc here as he did.
Yeah, same.
So I was kind of, okay, you know. But I really liked, you know, we were talking about JoJo, the title character, the little kid earlier. Roman Griffin Davis it's his first movie, really. And he was really good. You know, like, he's carrying the weight of this, you know, complicated narrative. And I thought he was really good. But the standout to me was Thomasin McKenzie as Elsa. She's the one who I would put, like, if I was voting for stuff, she's the one I'd put in. Supporting actress and the one that would be like the highlight of this movie as far as awards attention goes. I just thought she was really good in, because I mean, she has to be this just scared, you know, completely frightened child. I mean, she's still a child herself, she's a teenager, but I mean, she's very much a child within this world, where this war is happening, and her religion is under attack, or, you know, people of her faith are under attack. And so she has to be just frazzled 24/7, but to come off with this kind of confidence and kind of turn JoJo's perception of her, you know, to play with it the way she does, I thought was really brilliant. And I, she was just very much the standout of the whole piece for me.
I completely agree with that. I think, yeah, she has to be believably scared, but also believably charming, towards JoJo, to not only almost romantically, it seems like, but also just helping to turn the tide on his whole brain and his feelings towards Jewish people. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I'd only seen her before in, blanking on the name of the movie. She's off the grid with her father, Ben Foster. It is called
Leave No Trace.
Leave No Trace, yes. Which she's such a different character. So this, I really see her range in those two performances, in that she plays someone very quiet and reserved, and it kind of, everything's under the surface. And there's some of that here too, that you can tell, there's a lot internally that you can kind of see in the performance, but this is a lot bigger and more lively too, and it's really energetic in a way that I thought was great. Same for Roman Griffin Davis as JoJo. I think he carries this amazingly well and is really funny. One other standout I wanted to throw out was his friend Yorkie, played by Archie Yates, who's barely in it, but he's so good. And apparently that kid is going to be in the reboot of Home Alone. I saw in the news the other day, which I think is pretty great.
That's right. I did see that. No, he was, I wanted more of him, of their dynamic, really. That was because, the moments we do get with them are really funny.
He's just like the roundest, you know, round face, round glasses, round body. And they make like kind of jokes about that. And it's so funny. He was,
he's very much little Nick Frost.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely that vibe.
to JoJo's Simon Pegg. Oh my gosh, that's like, I wanted more of that.
That's perfect.
They should just let them two remake Shaun of the Dead or something. That's the one they need to remake.
Perfect.
Leave Home Alone alone. Exactly. And let them get with Edgar Wright. That'd be great.
That is perfect. I didn't even think of the Shaun of the Dead connection there. Yeah.
the one other thing I wanted to, we were talking about Sam Rockwell, but Alfie Allen plays his kind of like cohort, the guy from he was in John Wick is probably where most people will recognize him from, but I liked their dynamic too, and they're, I think they were in it like the perfect amount and shared or you know, for the you know, the prominence of Rockwell's character arc, I thought they were in it just the right amount of time, and you know, a lot of good relationships going on in here.
I think so. That's something I've noticed in Taika's other movies too, that he, like, even these kind of side relationships that are not very central feel like they really are coworkers and friends, and that kind of makes the world feel real and bigger, even though it's obviously constructed and you can almost see kind of like, I don't know, I thought of Wes Anderson a lot with this, especially in the beginning, as they're in almost these scout uniforms and just a constructed world in that way.
Oh, yeah.
The set design is obviously very particular, but it does feel like a real world because of those relationships.
Yeah, even the shot setup, like the first shot, a couple shots we see are just like very static still, you know, on JoJo getting dressed. Yeah, it definitely felt very
panning
very
through these streets and kind of following him walking. And and I want to just say I love the opening credits with the Beatles song. It's such an energetic opening. And also felt Wes Andersonian, if that's the way to say that.
And honestly, you know, when I came out of it, like I said, you know, it's been just over a month since I've seen this. So coming out of it, I was a little lukewarm as compared to, you know, kind of the hype I'd heard going into it. But just in talking about it with you and, you know, kind of remembering these relationships throughout the movie, they've left kind of more of an impact than I maybe suspected they did. So, you know, kudos to JoJo Rabbit for that. I wasn't as high on it initially, but it's making me want to rewatch it even more. So, definitely.
Yeah. Well, let's see. One more thing I wanted to touch base with on it, and then we can kind of wrap up our discussion. But so there is something, I'm going to kind of avoid a spoiler here, but there's something that happens in JoJo's family that is a big emotional moment towards the end of the movie. And this is one that, initially, when it happens, it kind of pulled me out of it, and I wasn't sure if I liked it as a filmmaking from a filmmaking standpoint. I guess that it worked well for the movie, but the more I think about it, the more I think it probably was okay. It kind of shatters the bubble, I guess, of the comedy, and it's been mostly relatively light tone until something, this big thing happens. What did you feel about that scene?
Honestly, that was the moment in my initial viewing that sold it for me.
Really? Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it was the one where it was like, it showed that it could take it to that next level of, you know, of the balance in the drama and the comedy. But that it wasn't just contained to this certain bubble of, you know, or contained, it wasn't limited to go in a certain, you know, a certain limited direction with its comedy or with its drama. It showed me it would actually kind of face real world consequences and more, you know, furthermore past, you know, just how it hit me from an emotional standpoint. I thought how Taika executed it as a director was just, I thought it was a perfect way to kind of deliver the gut punch that was intended. So it was actually like from, you know, I was kind of going back and forth on like, because I really, you know, Taika's an interesting, you know, character in and of itself and as a director, because I think he gets, you know, a lot of praise for being so quirky and out there, and just people love his personality, which is great. He does seem like, you know, like, obviously I don't know him personally, but he seems like a fun guy to be around. But you know, his movies kind of have felt like sometimes they'll get a pass just because people like him as a person. Like, not to say anything, like, I didn't like any of his movies. I think Hunt for the Wilder People and Thor Ragnarok are really fun, but I didn't think maybe they were as deserved of the praise they'd gotten.
Maybe not weighty in the way this one is.
That, and it was just like, you know, they're not as strange as people make them out to be. And so, even with this one, up until that point, I was like, this isn't as just like kind of weird and out there and loony as I thought a movie about a kid with, you know, a pretend Hitler friend would be. But when it hit that moment, I was like, oh, that hit me. Like, that, and the way he executed it was like, oh, that was striking. Like, it was the one moment where it was like, okay, you have a grasp on what you're doing here, and you know what you want to get out of the audience. So that was kind of the moment from, you know, second one that I was like, okay, you sold me on it.
Nice.
That's cool.
Yeah. I think the more I've thought about it, it does something. So one of my very favorite movies is similar in some ways, and that is Life is Beautiful, which is a much older movie. But it's about,
I have not seen that,
the Holocaust. It's an Italian movie. I watched it for class, actually, and then I found out like a lot of movie people really love it, and I thought it was fantastic. Basically, it's a Holocaust comedy, which sounds completely irreverent on the surface, but essentially it does kind of a similar thing where it sets up a pretty good life that this guy has, and it's very funny and charming and almost dreamlike in how wonderful it is. It's just a very happy movie, and then the Holocaust comes to town basically and shatters it all. And I think that this moment in JoJo does a similar thing, and I think because it is such a tonal shift that I'm just maybe scrutinizing it more, but I think it does work, and I think I still like Life is Beautiful better, but it worked for me as well. That is one that I've seen a little bit of controversy around as well, as whether that moment was handled well in JoJo, but I think it was. Yeah. So it looks
really,
like we're in agreement. Yeah. Well, I think I could definitely see how
it would be a little too jarring, you know, given the tone up until that point. But yeah, I don't know what it was. It was just the moment that kind of sold it for me. So yeah. I need to see Life is Beautiful though. I know I've heard of that, and I know it's got a lot of award attention, and you know, back in the day, or I think it was late 90s probably, but I've heard a lot about that. I still haven't watched it. I need to give that a viewing.
Also similar in that the director stars in it, and he's sort of the comedic centerpiece of it in a way, and it's Roberto Benigni is his name.
It
won the foreign language Oscar that year, and he's apparently he's pretty big deal, but beyond that movie, it's the only movie of his that I've seen. But it's really very funny and very moving as well. So yes, we'll end our Jojo Rabbit podcast by recommending another movie, Life is Beautiful. But also, it sounds like we both recommend Jojo Rabbit pretty highly.
Yeah, no, I definitely think it's worth seeing, and it is, you know, an experiment enough on its own. And, you know, especially if you're not familiar with Taika's work, I think it would be a good introduction to his kind of style. Yeah. And then to go back and maybe dig in the what we do in the shadows. I would definitely, you know, I may not like just heap adoration on top of it, but I did really enjoy it and definitely think it's worth seeing.
Great. Well, cool. Thank you so much for joining us for this discussion, and we hope to have you back again very soon. Absolutely. Philip, thanks so much.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Thank you again to Philip for being back, and thank you to you for listening to this episode. If you want to stay up to date on Art House Garage, sign up for our email newsletter at arthousegarage.com/subscribe, and follow us on social media. We are at Art House Garage on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and Letterboxd. And you can see all of our reviews, videos, and podcasts at arthousegarage.com. Shoot me an email if you want to talk movies to andrew@arthousegarage.com, and stay tuned for more podcasts in the coming weeks. Till then, keep it snob free.